When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to this week's Runner's World podcast with me, Ben Hobson.
And me, Jane Maguire.
This week's special guest is none other than Mr. Kieran Alger. Mr. Danube has joined us for a catch-up as he enters the final week of his challenge. But before we get into people having great success with running, let's talk about our running, Jane. Shall I get some... In the edit, shall I put some really like melancholy music in the background?
Yeah, put some... Get a little violin.
Okay, go on.
It's not looking good. I've twisted my ankle. It's the long and short of it. Walking the dog. So I wasn't even doing anything glamorous or exciting while doing it. Just had a day off, took the dog out for a big old walk, twisted my ankle, then had to walk 2 miles on a twisted ankle.
That'll be what did it.
Thought it was broken because it looked like someone had attached a cricket ball to my ankle. Went and got it x-rayed and it's not broken, which I took as a good thing. But the woman who x-rayed me, lovely woman in Kingston A&E, said, actually, you know, a lot of the time, soft tissue injuries take longer to heal than bones. I was like, okay.
So what has it done to your racing calendar for the rest of the year?
I did it last Monday, so we were a week and a day, and it's still very, very bruised. Can just about walk on it. Definitely couldn't run. I've been managing to kind of strap it up and cycle because I feel like as long as I don't stand up, I feel like I'm not putting the ankle, I don't know, you know more about cycling than me. I feel like I'm not using my ankle as much not putting as much weight through it.
Yeah.
But I think... it'd be stupid of me to run in the next week or so. And then I think I was thinking of London and that's less than 6 weeks away. And I just think it would be stupid, wouldn't it? To then go back into like a 20-mile, do you mean, trying to really push it. But we'll see. I mean, I might run on it next week and it'd be absolutely fine. But my gut is telling me that that's not going to be the case.
You'll need to let all the swelling go down and then the bruising will be there for a bit.
Yeah. I think for the first time in my life, I need to just... let it be, because I think I'm always rushing like every runner to get back to running, but I think actually this is the kind of thing that could go on for months and months and months, couldn't it, if I just...
Yeah, you're best getting to see like a physio, because then someone will tell you like, oh no, your ligaments are fine or they're not, or you know, because you might have done something to those, so they're ankles. There you go.
So you know, not the best, but it could be fine. But I think I'm at that, to be honest. I think I wasn't enjoying the marathon training as much as I have done in the past. I don't know if that's not having a coach. I don't know if that's trying to run for joy and that being quite difficult when you're trying to run for a marathon. I just don't know. I wasn't in a good vibe with it.
Right.
So it might just be the universe, and it might just be that actually I do a spring marathon and I take a few months to get over this and then be running again. Do you mean it's not the end of the world, is it?
If there's no joy in the joy plan.
Exactly. And I actually feel like when I first did it and I couldn't walk the dog, that was making me really sad. Like the fact I couldn't go outside and walk the dog was hurting me more than not being able to go for a run. So maybe that's a sign, isn't it? That I wasn't. Yeah. I could have done this a week before doing loads of 20-mile runs and I'd be devastated. But I was only at the like half marathon. But what about you? You've hurt your back.
I mean, I've got just very much, I think, age related. Just getting old as I drift this towards my 40th birthday. I've got some bulging lower back discs, which I'm actually still able to run Running seems to be the bit that I'm most comfortable with. It's actually stuff like right now sitting down, I'm actually very uncomfortable, and I have like lots of random referral, like it impinges on the nerve, on different nerves, and I get sort of random referral pain down my leg and in different muscles and stuff. But running seems all right. The bike is okay. I was off the bike for a while, which is for me not great, but yeah, back on that. So yeah, I'm fine.
Big half next.
Yeah, the big half. I just haven't been able to do any training, which is fine. I'll just go and run it and enjoy it. But yeah, I just need to do militant core exercises for the rest of my life now. So that's exciting. You what's that? Kayla Ritsu?
That's
you like doing
Love
those,
it.
Don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, her. There you go. I'll just you know about that. You always tell me you're doing core exercises from her, so I'll just do that.
Yeah, just keep your low back pressed into the floor at all times and you're fine.
All right, great. That sounds like sound advice.
Well, otherwise because I have sciatica, so otherwise you put more pressure on your spine.
All right, this is true. You need to...
That is solid advice, actually.
Oh, well, great. Thank you so much. All right, good. I'm just going to go and press my lower back into the floor. No, that's it. Just off to do that forever and ever. Right. Let's get Kieran on and he can tell us all about this fantastic thing he's been doing.
Guest of the week, here in the studio. Guest of the week, sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete, could be a physio, or a complete unknown.
I mean, I think you've got that great motivator of the fact is you've got, what, 6 days? Less than of running?
Of course. I've got seven days left now, seven running days.
And you're going to use all of them? Are you going to try and, or are you going to squash it down a bit if you sprint finish?
I was saying earlier, I was thinking about, should I do like a 50 mile finisher?
I think it
basically is going to work out at about 31 or 32 miles a day for 7 days from here on in.
It's not leisurely.
It's still a long way to go. Like still, you know, it's even, I keep saying, it's like even on the morning of the day where you've, last day, if you've got 30 miles to run, it's still not done, you know, it's still...
It's interesting, isn't it? Because all like the distances that you're working with every single day and for this whole thing, it kind of, it foreshortens what that actually is. Do you know, in my head already, like you're so capable now of just dealing with a 30-mile day that it almost becomes a given that that's fine. But really, 30 miles, do you know what I mean? Like you've got to like consider it's huge.
Anything can happen, and it's like when I'm out there running, like throughout this whole thing there have been days where, you know, you're fine 1 minute, you take a step and then something twinges and something, you can feel, get a sensation, one of the tendons, and I have to ease back off, and the minute I feel something like that, I walk or I slow down and then you just hope that that makes it go away, or and then it often has disappeared, but I know that I'm kind of one wrong footstep or one moment of running too fast or doing something silly or taking a step down a pavement away from, you know, if something bad happens, if I sprain my ankle, whatever, all those things, that's it, it's game over, you know. So I've still run with that, you know, but
yeah.
Well, I
haven't
pranked you out with 7 days to go.
Exactly. Now I'm gonna, yeah.
Also, be careful of your, just Kieran, be careful of your lower back. That's all I'm saying as well, you know.
You're gonna walk for the next week and be like, exactly. Ben and Jane have ruined it.
Yeah, I'm gonna have someone sweeping the path in front of me with, yeah, just like.
Well, look, we started talking already, but I'm gonna say welcome back to the Runner's World Podcast, Kieran Alger. AKA the Running Pilgrim, AKA Mr. Danube, which is the one I've made that one up.
Thank you for having me back.
Where in the world are you?
I'm currently sat in a place called Fürstensell in Germany. I'm actually about 180 miles from the place that I finished my last run. So I've made it to a place called Großmülheim, and I'm about 260 miles, 240 to 260 miles from the finish now, with 7 days left to run.
But normally you start at like 6 a.m. right, and we're talking at 9 it. So what are we ruining today's run? What's happening?
You've absolutely destroyed it. I've stopped the run for the Runner's World Podcast. That's how much. No, I'm on a rest day today. So
you're not running at all.
I've taken, this is my one and only rest day that I've had the whole time. And I basically banked this rest day by doing two shorter stages in one about 10 days ago. And I was either going to use that to split some of the longer distances in half, or I've decided just to take one full rest day. So, and who knows how that's going to go. It might, you know, it might really help the body, or it might set me, you know, off my kind of pace. And if the body starts to repair and the mind goes a bit loose, all of those things, I don't know what's going to happen. But
yeah,
I've already cleaned the entire house 3 times this morning.
I think you've got to move. You've got to move in some capacity. I think if you stop completely, then everything would kind of go, all right, cool, shut down, repair time. So you've got to go for a walk, at least, or something, right?
Like, do some burpees, right?
Yeah, do a really intense hit. Do a hit session, really intense, really intense. Yeah. Get that heart rate up.
I will go out for a wander, I think. Yeah, I might even go and run even a couple of miles just around here, just to keep myself sane.
I mean, is it just as a preemptive before the final week that this was the day that you kind of had in your head as a rest day? Because 60 days in, rest day at this point seems kind of like you should have had it like halfway.
Too little, too late.
I wasn't really planning on a rest day until I had a friend come and run with me, and they had a car and they moved the numbers around on the spreadsheet and showed that I could do those 2 stages in one.
Right.
And then I had this day and I was thinking about when to use it. My family are here at the moment and we're all kind of staying in one place. We have, at the moment, we have access to kind of a swimming pool and stuff. So actually, I just thought it'd be nice to pause, have some time with the family, and then go into those last 7 days refreshed. But also, they've been crewing me. They've been having to drive. The distances from where we are getting longer and longer. So yesterday, I think it was, you know, it's like 130 miles each way.
Wow.
So my crew are getting tired as well.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah.
So I thought it would be nice for us just to take a bit of a breather and see. But actually, at the end of yesterday, I felt like I could run longer. So I'm feeling strong, and it may or may not prove to be a smart idea, but we'll see.
This whole adventure, kind of, I want to just try and break it down into the different bits, because it's kind of it needs unpicking. And from a physical point of view, I kind of want to get a take of what it's been like expectation-wise and the reality of it. Like, physically, how's the body behaved? Has it been very similar to all the other longer distance runs you've done? Because it's completely uncharted territory for you. So what was it, you know, has it been as straightforward as you thought, or has it just been, has your body even impressed yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I had no idea. The most I'd done before was 7 marathons in 7 days in London whilst working, but you've got all the home comforts, all the food that I like. Mm. I wasn't carrying a backpack. So this was really a step into the unknown. I had no idea what the body would do after 3 days. I was really worried that, you know, told lots of people that I'm going to do it, that after 3 days I might be on a plane home. So yeah, just go, sorry guys. But actually, the first 3 or 4 days, I ran quite long. I had some 40 milers in there. The feet blistered up, toes were a bit damaged. You know, everything was a bit sore and tight. And then after a certain point, it just settled pretty much. Everything kind of settled. And then I was surprised at how well the body started to cope with layering on these distances. You know, most of them have been 20 miles plus. A lot of them have been, I guess, over a marathon distance, a few shorter ones thrown in. And yeah, I'm really surprised. There were a few things I was really worried that would go wrong. You know, all the tendons, Achilles, you know, the tendons that run down to the outside of the knees, the ones that go into the top of the foot, those are the, I guess, the wear and tear injuries that I feared most. I didn't worry too much about muscular because I'm running at paces that are very, I guess, recovery paces, really. But I've been massively surprised at how well the body has coped. And every time, I mean, don't get me wrong, that everything on my body has grumbled at one point or another.
Yeah.
And they've all taken it in turns to do so. Sometimes during a run, sometimes over a series of days. But what I've tried to do, at the minute I feel something that isn't right, I stop running and I walk, or I ease back the pace a lot, or I might even slightly change my running style to try and ease that off. And there have definitely been moments where the fear sets in, particularly around the tendons, because if those go, you know, you rest is the only way to recover those, and it can be days and days and days. So, but touch wood, so far I've managed that process of the grumbles kind of fine. And physically, it's been shocking to me that I feel like I'm getting stronger, which I didn't expect at all. I expected
run home, Kieran. You can run home now.
Listen, if you could talk to my wife and negotiate it, I would, you know, It's a funny one because I feel like I'm 7 days out and I'm getting the Sunday back to school vibes. You know, I feel...
Are you? You're feeling nervous?
A little bit like, yeah. I don't really want it to end. And I, if you just asked me in the beginning before I went out, I, by this stage, I thought I'd be praying for the finish to come soon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I, that's not really how I feel, which is a huge surprise to me.
And a huge concern for your wife, because
yeah, absolutely.
That means, yeah, that means that you've absolutely got this bug. That's the big... What's next?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you think it will it have changed you forever? Like, do you think you'll ever be able to sit behind a laptop and be a journalist again? Or are you Forrest Gump now?
This is the first time I've opened my laptop, I think, in...
Is this goodbye?
60 days. And it feels odd having it open. I don't know. I mean, it is... It's a very different... You get into this rhythm, and it's a wonderful rhythm, actually. I've really enjoyed it, of moving your body in the morning from 6 in the morning or 7 for 4, 5, 6 hours. Those hours shrink. It's crazy. Like, 3 hours doesn't feel long to me anymore. And then you arrive in a new place, you find somewhere to stay. I've got this rhythm. You have to go to the supermarket, get your food, but you're sort of exploring new places for the brief time that you're there. Rest up and go again, and it's actually quite exciting, and yeah, it feels like you're alive. It's a very different feeling. I do feel quite liberated by it, if I'm being honest.
Well, that's because I wanted to know about the physical, because obviously it's a great feat of endurance and your body's going to have to develop and cope, and as runners that's always quite interesting. But the most interesting side of it is the adventure side, the mental side of it. How has it lived up to expectation? How has it exceeded expectation beyond measure? Just what you were thinking of your journey and how you'd feel about it. How do you feel about it now?
It's been incredible, and I've found it a lot more kind of scary in some places, a lot more fun in other places. You know, I've had the extremes, actually, and the one thing I haven't found so much, there haven't been too many days where I've woken up and thought I don't really want to run today.
Yeah.
I guess in this, it's almost like there've been chapters of the story as I've gone through different countries and experienced different things. I mean, Romania was very difficult. You know, not only there were longer stretches in kind of wilderness, in felt like I was running places that no one has ever run.
Yeah.
You know, because no one really, I didn't see many runners there, and people weren't expecting you to run there. So that felt quite exposed, and I felt quite nervous. Obviously there was an awful lot of dogs, wild dogs, guard dogs, farm dogs that all wanted to eat me.
And I want to talk about the dogs.
That was terrifying.
Me too.
That was terrifying. And then there's lots of logistical things that, you know, have been challenging as well. You know, sorting out your kit, getting into the rhythm of what you're doing with your kit and how you're storing things. Or a good example is the first day, it only rained for about 7 minutes in 40 days. But for those minutes, I hadn't really thought about all the stuff that might break if it wasn't waterproof. Reacting and moving all of that around. And there's different sort of mental challenges. And, you know, the adventure of sort of finding new places to stay each time, and then having other people arrive out of nowhere on the course as well. And that's been one of my favourite bits of the whole thing that I wasn't really expecting quite so much, is having these individuals sort of appear and be part of the story, and the moments of kindness that I've received from people that I would not have been able to make it to where I am if these people hadn't taken it upon themselves to come out, sometimes literally without me knowing, on the side of a road holding water, and then help me along. And that's been a lot more, I guess, a lot more kind of fun and lively than I thought it would be.
Definitely, I think in the first few weeks of the journey, when it was kind of, as you say, it was harder going, perhaps where you were, Romania and those early countries, you were sort of slightly more exposed, and you were having these moments where you were on your own for a very long time, and then suddenly someone would hand you a kilo of plums or something, do you know, like, or that sort of level of stuff, and you could see this big old sort of dip of like, oh God, this is super hard, and then this big old up from like just that one moment giving you a huge amount of motivation.
Yeah, I mean, I had another, you know, I found myself, the challenges as well are very different. I had to, in certain places, I was running down lines of trucks, you know, 5 mile long queue of trucks that were going over the border crossings. And there's a lot of like traffic moving the other way. And they're just places that you just wouldn't run. And you've got to work out, you know, how am I going to deal with this? How does it feel? I feel out of my depth here. I probably shouldn't be running here. I've got police looking at me. And then one truck driver called me over and he was a Romanian guy, and we chatted for a minute about what I was doing. I chatted to him about his own feat of endurance, which was sitting in this queue for about 7 years. And I was like, I'd rather be me than you, you know?
Yeah.
And then he reached into his cab and handed me 2 litre bottle of water, which I then had to run with, which I didn't really need, but that...
Yeah, you can't, like, drop it 10 steps later, can you?
He's pouring it. He sees just watches you pour it away.
Exactly. That was all the water he had. But, no, I mean, and that... It was funny because that little... Him handing me that bottle of water gave me 2 or 3 miles of spring in my step. It just... It lifts you up, you know? It's... that's been really fascinating, that those moments of kindness are such a boost along the way. And particularly they seem to, the timing, it's, you know, they seem to have happened at times when I've really needed them to, in places where I've felt either, you know, nervous or exposed or a bit vulnerable or, you know, a bit down, and they've come just at the right time.
Did you preempt that the mental part would be a tricky bit?
Yeah, I knew that was going to be tough. You know, I kind of expected, and although actually that's interesting, I don't think I expected it to the running part to be the bit that I found most comfortable, and the mental part, particularly in Romania, and the feeling exposed, to be the toughest part. That was really interesting. Like a couple of times when I, you know, there was one time after I'd been attacked by 3 dogs, I didn't want to leave the hotel room. Like at that morning, I was done. I was tired of being tense and nervous and afraid of running. And I didn't expect that. I didn't expect to have to deal with that so much. But, and those, everything kind of helped. Those notes from my family that I would have every morning helped, and I wrote a few things on the powders, and again, you know, talking about timing, on that day, Dimitar, who had kind of arrived in Bulgaria to help me, complete stranger found on Instagram, he came, and I knew he was going to be waiting for me at 20 miles that day because he'd come back to crew me, and when he did, because I knew he was going to be there, it made me able to get out of that hotel room. Without him, that would have been a different day. But
on behalf of all dog lovers everywhere, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you hate dogs?
No, I mean, I love dogs, but this is, it's such a...
This is wild. These are like wolves, right?
Yeah. Well, then, yeah, like wolves, a... yeah.
There's lots and lots and lots of stray dogs in Romania and in Bulgaria. There's a few in Serbia. And they're sort of mixed up with what I would call kind of property dogs, guard dogs, yard dogs, whatever, these are protecting particular bits of property. And then there's lots of farm dogs, sheep dogs. And there's this kind of mix of all these dogs, and you're not really sure which are which.
They're gangs. That's just the
gangs of dogs. Yeah, yeah. Hundreds of
gangs
them.
Gangs of dogs.
And
packs, gangs.
Gangs is more threatening. Packs is the actual term. Gangs I'm going for because it sounds dangerous.
Many of them, you can't think of them like dogs that we have, waggy tails, fluffy, cuddly pets. You know, most of them look quite... They're, even the ones that are pets look quite sort of mangy and wild. They've got like a hyena look in their eyes, you know. It's sort of, and if you think about, you know, an example of this, every time you got near a village, you'd be running through villages because there are dogs wandering around. I'd have to stop and walk, and I'd walk through that village holding pepper spray in one hand, an audio deterrent in the other. And sometimes, I mean, I've got a dog rock, which I picked up somewhere in Romania, and I've carried it 1500 miles in my pocket. It's now become an artifact.
It's called your dog rock,
and I call it the dog rock.
Yes, incredible.
Because I guess that if they went for you, I remember having this discussion with you, and we talked about rabies and stuff, like it would be like the end of it, wouldn't it, if they all chased you? It must be terrifying.
Yeah, you'd be in the hospital having injections and God knows what. It was and I didn't, you know, the thing is, in reality, there was probably only 3 or 4 incidents where I felt genuinely under proper threat. There was one where in that town in Becic where there was 3 dogs actually came, and I could feel their breath on my shins and their teeth were out and their hairs were up, and it was terrifying.
Yeah.
And the other times, it's just, they would often back away, but you just didn't know what was going to happen every time you saw a dog.
That's the thing, it builds. It just builds and builds, right? Like, you could sense the tension in it. Like, you're meant to be having this adventure, but there was this just underlying tension the whole time.
Yeah. And what was interesting is originally my plan was to stick as closely to the river as possible, but I ended up going back to what is the Eurovelo cycling route across Europe and following that more closely because that was where more people had been. I felt really exposed when I was running in places where people didn't expect to see people. And that was often where you might find farms with dogs and sheep dogs that might come and also they'd go at you, you know. It was I didn't realize how tense I was until I kind of moved over into Serbia, and until I started running around Austria and Germany, where you just can, the only thing you've got to worry about really is running.
Well, there we go. Can't have all the fun, can we?
Well, yeah.
That'll be a chapter in the book, dogs.
Dogs, yeah. And then you can...
what about getting lost? What about that sort of stuff? What about route changes as you've been going? Have you sort of, were you easy to go with the flow, or were you just like, would it just bring you out in hives of anxiety if you considered like, oh, I've got to make this detour and all that sort of stuff?
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive and June. Olive and June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I haven't had to do too many detours.
That's good.
I've missed a couple of clangers, other people. Often on this, you'll see there's lots of cycle tourists who are coming the other way. I'm one of the only ones going upstream. Most people come down, so I get to sort of talk to them about where they've been. And I know that some people, there's one mistake that I could have made, which I nearly did, was going to a border that crossed from Serbia to Hungary, where they only take EU and Serbian passports.
Oh.
And if I'd have gone that route, that would have been like a nice 200-mile round trip.
Ooh.
Or something, you know, it would have been that might, I think things like that, if I'd have gone at any point, if I'd have gone too deep into it, that could have been like, get me out of here.
Thanks a lot, Brexit.
Yeah.
That would have been a political swerve, yeah. We wouldn't have been expecting from this
trip.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's been, routes have been okay. I've ended up running in some crazy places. Like I've run dual carriageways. I literally ran past Vienna airport along all the main roads, just like running around like Heathrow or whatever.
Yeah.
Just because the route took me in, like a not a nice way into Vienna. That was crazy.
Yeah. You look at something on a map, on a route, when you're planning these things, and it looks reasonable. Like you can't, until you get there, you have absolutely no comprehension. I mean, I've done it in the UK and I've gone, oh, that looks quite good around that bit. And you end up and it's like, oh no, this is just a big A road.
Yeah. Or dead ends. Or I've run through a few places where it says, don't run through here. There's a big sign saying, no, danger, don't run through here. I'm like, I have to. I have no choice because I'm not going back.
Have you become heavily reliant on... It'd be amiss not to talk to you about kit. Have you become heavily reliant on one thing that you knew you would rely on heavily and something that you didn't think was going to be that important and has been super important? And I'm going to say watches probably very important. Or could you think you could have done it without?
I think I would have easily done it without the watch.
Okay.
The one thing that absolutely couldn't have done without, and this is an obvious one, daily life, is the phone.
Yeah.
And a couple of days back, my phone screen went black during a run.
Oh, God.
And I was like, the phone has died. If the phone has died, I'm in trouble because it's my navigation, it's my communication, it's all the stuff that I'm shooting. It's got, and it had done that thing where sometimes in the sunlight, the screen goes black.
Oh,
I couldn't see
hot.
It right
okay.
now.
And
it,
yeah.
But for 6 miles, I'm thinking, what am I going to do? I've now got no phone. Yeah, and that thing, I realised that would jeopardise the entire trip. It would become very difficult. I guess the thing that I also have relied really heavily on is the backpack being right. That broke a few times, but I had to sort of lash various bits together and make it work. Some kit that I thought I'd rely on that I haven't relied on at all, and this is going to be this is a big admission here, is the sort of 4 or 5 kilos worth of camping gear.
Yeah, when you spoke about, I did want to bring this up, Kieran, because you said you were going to be lying like in a field in a tent.
Yeah.
You haven't used that tent once.
Oh, well, it's a bivvy sack, but yeah, I haven't. And yeah, I've carried it.
I mean, for the best, I think it was a crazy idea.
I mean, not for not wanting to, but from the kindness of strangers and just some planning, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think if I'm really honest, like the Romania set the precedent, and I realised quite quickly that because I was running a lot for that first 3 weeks with that kind of on high alert and feeling tense, and at the end of it, it was so important for me to have a place of sanctuary. And I didn't think, when I was back in England, I didn't think that would be so important. But now I realise that wild camping or camping in campsites on bivvying would have brought so many different challenges.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, even you get back to the campsite, it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon and there's no shade and you're sat in 37 degree heat and you're just sitting there waiting for it to get dark to go to bed. If you go to the supermarket, you have to take the pack with you, and those supermarkets, because the campsites are outside of town, it's like a 3 kilometre kind of round trip.
Yeah, you're just adding miles, you're adding effort. It's.
And camping's just hell on earth. I don't know why anyone would do it anyway, let alone when you've run like 3 marathons. No.
So if it helps, I am going to be in a camper van for some of it towards the end. So.
Right. Well.
Okay. So
one night I'll dip out.
Just use that. Yeah, use that bag once, and then it'll be worth carrying it for like months.
There've been moments with the when I've had crew that I've put the pack with them, and I've run with a lighter pack, but. In a couple of days' time, I'll go back and be on my own again for a bit, and I will carry it still, you know. Yeah, and I think it's been really the important thing for me is that was my fallback option. If I really needed to, I had everything I needed to be self-sufficient and not rely on that. So I was always comfortable that if I had to stop at some point, I could, if I really needed to.
And how many pairs of shoes have you got through? And what shoes are you running in for anyone who's not been following you on Instagram?
I've used 3, and I ran the first 700 miles in one pair with the Saucony Endorphin Speed 2, and then I switched to the Speed 3, which they're just a little bit wider, I think, in the toe box. They've got a little bit more cushion, and I've run in Speed 3s up until now. And I swapped to a second pair of Speed 3s. So I think I did about another 500 miles in the first pair of Speed 3s, and now I'm going to finish it in the second pair. And they've done remarkably well, you know. I mean, the wear and tear, they were good, you know. I think arguably with the first pair of Speed 3s, I could have gone on a bit longer, but yeah, it's all good.
Great advert for them, isn't it?
I mean,
you're waiting for that endorsement to wait,
yeah, for the big check to come through.
I mean, it was. I mean, I remember talking to you before you went, and it was like a big old decision that you had to make about what shoes you were going to rely on, and not from a like brand perspective, but purely from a comfort and what you thought might be the best shoe for the job. Which is, some people might think is a really easy decision to make, but you know. For you or I, who meticulously like mull over these sort of things, that's quite a sort of a big ask. Do you think you still would? I mean, it's very difficult to say if you've made the right decision, but I guess if they've stood the test of time, then you have.
I would probably go straight to the Speed 3s if I'm honest. I think the Speed 2s are just a little bit narrow, and I have a bit of a problem with my toes, so where they sort of sit on each other, and I need a bit more space. But the best compliment I can pay to them is that I haven't really noticed them. You know, and that's perfect. Rest of my kit as well. I think all of my kit has worked really, really well, to be honest. I haven't really had too many troubles.
How smelly have you been?
I have been absolutely atrocious.
Because I want to know about the sort of like 3 t-shirt combo thing. Because it's you were running in like 30-something, 40-degree heat, but you were wearing 3 tops.
I had 2. Right. So I've like a little thin...
Was that a fashion statement?
Chasing?
No, no. It's I've always run like that. It's how I sort of feel comfortable. So I've got a very thin Innovate base layer top that weighs nothing.
Right. Yeah.
And then I wear the other t-shirt on top. And yeah, I don't know. It's just how I feel comfortable. It seems to protect the nipples is the main thing.
It's very important.
How often are you changing both tops?
Never, really.
What?
He gets them washed occasionally, and it's a big treat.
Yeah, so I think in the first...
But can you not wash it, you know, when you're on holiday and you wash stuff in the sink? Can't you do that?
I could, but then I have to carry washing powder, which I all buy, and then you have to buy a big box of washing powder and then leave it. And I mean, Jane, if, as an example, I decant toothpaste into a little pot and only carry like 5 days toothpaste. So that's how I'm trying to keep the weight down.
So okay, so carrying powder.
You've got to embrace the smell.
And I mean, the longest I went, I think, was probably about 12 or 13 days in the same kit. And I'd started to dislike my own smell, but I'm still going into, I still have to go into supermarkets and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they really disliked you.
And they loved me in there. Like one lady in a German bakery, after I'd made my order, she said, You know there are tables outside.
Yeah, that's when you know.
Yeah, please.
That's when you know you stay.
Please leave the building.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, that's very good. What sort of like little bit of kit has surprised you that you didn't think? Like, have you found that actually having a, like a buff with you like the whole time, or is it just, you know, the little bits and pieces that you've just been reaching for that you didn't think? Oh, actually, I've been using that every single day, and I didn't think I would. Lip balm. I don't know, something.
Yeah, I mean, there's, I guess one thing really is actually, it wasn't a piece of kit. I grabbed a load of, airline toiletry plastic bags, and they've been incredibly useful. And I hadn't planned to do that. I just picked them up. But for things like putting my phone in when it starts to rain, or that moment where the rain came and I had to sort of keep everything protected or move things around, they've been absolutely magic. The other thing I guess that's been more useful than I thought was I've got a little satellite communicator, Garmin InReach, and that's just meant it's every morning I set the tracker and I can send a link to my family and they see that I'm moving and well. And
That's...
I mean, I didn't know they were watching. I thought maybe they were just ignoring it until one day I forgot to tick the box for my dad. And I got like loads of messages. What's going on? Where are you? Why haven't you started? Are you all right? You know, it's and I can put that, and it's kind of safe, and it's been, that's my backup tracking as well. So that's been quite cool.
That's good.
Yeah, and I lost one of my special Raid Light bottles early on the road somewhere in Bulgaria. I didn't realise it had fallen out. So I had 1 2-liter and a half plastic bottle. I grew to love that plastic bottle.
Still got it?
Still got it.
Is this the one that the man gave you from the cab?
No,
that's a really lovely story.
Yeah, it was a shame it's not that one, but it's, I don't know. Because, you know, when you're on a journey like this, when you lose things, those little things happen to you.
Yeah.
They can weigh really heavy, you know. That was a bad day. I was coming to the end and I was struggling. It was hot and it started to rain and I was miserable. And I lost my bottle and I'm like, oh, that's it. I can't finish this journey now because I haven't got a bottle. You know, I've only got one bolt. So then when I found the new one and it fitted and it worked perfectly, I became my little friend, you know.
I can do this again. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Are you keeping the beard and the kind of, you must have a weird tan going on?
I've got the best tan. It looks, the only way to describe it, it looks like a pair of socks on a horse, you know, where that middle section of my leg is kind of, is as brown as it's ever been. And it's browner on the calves than it is on, because I've been running with the sun at my back most of the way because I'm going west, I guess. Yeah, and it's so. And then, my neckline. And the beard, I mean, this is the thing that I didn't really expect. It's got quite long and it's gone quite grey, and it's there's big sort of ginger patches in it. And there's some orange patches in the front that make it look like I've been eating Watsits and not bothered to clean my mouth.
Which, the way you smell is exactly what everyone thinks.
Yeah,
it's good. I mean, you've trimmed the tash, which is very important because you were getting it looks a bit neater now. But I think, I think keep it. Depends really on what your family feels, because they're the ones who have to interact with your face the most. So that's down to them. But you know,
I think
if you don't go on an adventure and you don't grow a massive beard, then I think that you've wasted a real opportunity.
I've never grown a beard in my life, so this is like this is once in a lifetime opportunity for me to see what it looks like. So, yeah, I've got like a personal best on this front as well.
Oh, all right, great. A BPB.
Yeah, exactly.
Fantastic.
But who knows, when I shave it all off, under here is there's going to be no tan.
The tan will be the
yeah.
tan will be insane.
Oh my God,
no,
be
you've got
wild.
To gradually fade it down to stubble. You can't. If you went just complete wet shave, you'd have the oddest looking face in the world.
And then the highlights, I guess, have been those little moments of people just being lovely. Because I guess after COVID, it must be such a weird. Remember when we didn't go outside and we didn't talk to anyone for months, years? It must be so nice to meet, have those little moments, I guess.
It's been the best part of this entire thing is seeing, you know, I think it was one of the things I hoped for, that you'd run through all these countries with all these different kind of people and different cultures and, you know, different challenges in the countries. But the one thing that would be the same throughout would be people coming out and being kind and helping a stranger. And that's been really true, and it's been really grounding and humbling. And I think just to see, it's changed my feeling about how I should be to strangers. And I think it's very easy to feel like inviting someone into your house that you've never met before, like in Milos in Serbia, invited me into his house with his family, sorted me out with food and everything. He's a 17-year-old lad who's come out and run with me and done that. And they opened their home and they were so lovely. They were like my own family for a day and a half. His dad got up at 5 o'clock in the morning to make me porridge and then drove me to my start point. And I just put myself in that position and think, well, if I was in London, would I have behaved like that? And if I'm being really honest, I think the answer is probably no, because I'm not programmed that way. And I think this has changed my attitude. I hope it makes me more open and more willing to be helpful, and it's lifted me, you know, it's definitely lifted me. I wouldn't be 7 days out from finishing this without all of those people coming out and doing what they did, from handing me a you know, a bag of plums and apricots to water, to coming and running with me or giving me their home, or Dimitar driving me, you know, and at key times. So that's, yeah, it's been wonderful.
Not to get sort of too, I don't know, maybe political on it, but do you think that the sort of like how we behave culturally in Great Britain and like the perception of Eastern Europe and all these sorts of things, I certainly think that there's been a lot of stigma placed on nations and how they behave and immigration and all these sorts of like characteristics that come with all of that. And you've run through the heartland of those countries and had nothing but pleasant experiences and kindness shown upon you. It's a very stark, it lies in stark contrast to perhaps the stories told about these different nations that we get on our little island.
Yeah, definitely. And I, you know, that's the one thing that's, again, it surprises me most. I've had zero trouble from human beings. You know, if anything, I've had help and support from human beings. I wasn't I thought I might encounter some of that. But what's really interesting is in some of the countries, you know, again, you know, people are very aware in Romania that they, of how the rest of Europe perceives them, and they talk openly about it, about the reputation that they've got from, I guess, and they'll say openly that this is because of maybe some of the people who traveled initially to the other countries and how they behaved or how they're sort of perceived, and they're desperate to try and change that perception. And again, you know, you go to Serbia and you think about recent kind of history, and the people are not the politicians is one of the things that they said to me a lot. We are not what our politicians might have done in the past, and they have a culture of hospitality anyway. It's kind of ingrained in them from, you know, for thousands of years, but that I think has accentuated this idea that they know they want to welcome people and show people that they're not what's shown in a Hollywood film or and all of those things. And I would recommend visiting those places. Like Serbia is just an absolute beautiful country with wonderful people. You know, it's that's been one of the highlights of the trip, crossing that country as well. You know, a magic destination.
What have people responded to you when you're sort of like, as you say, like this lorry driver called you over? Was he just like, what are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, they don't, this is, you know, if you think about it, it's proper sort of, you know, dual carriageway kind of roads. They're not expecting to see anybody on there. And they all get out of their trucks and some of them are sort of standing around. And people are shocked, you know, people are surprised to see me running where I'm running. You know, even the police, one of the great things that all the border crossings, I'd walk up to the border crossing and poke my head into the window. I'd have to lean down because they're all down for the cars. And the border guard would say to me, where have you come from? I'd say, Romania. Where are you going? I'm going to Germany. And he'd sort of pull a face. Where's your bike? That was the first question. Like, I don't have a bike. Where's your car? I don't have a car. What are you doing? And they just couldn't fathom. They've never seen it before. This isn't something that they expect, you know. And some people really can't grasp what it is that I'm doing, and they almost sort of close off and dismiss it. And then some people are blown away by it, and they get really excited, and they go and way and tell sort of their groups of friends. But it's been really positive, you know. People have been fascinated by the fact that this guy is, you know, if I walk into a shop, they're always sort of asking me where my bike is.
Because you're doing this as obviously a fundraising thing at the same time. So obviously, I mean, that probably helps explain it, some of it away. If you sort of I'm doing this for charity, and it kind of, people are, you know, that I guess there's a bit more knowledge in the world about people doing extreme things for charity. So I guess that kind of helps. But, you know, how's that been going for you, you know, along the way? Have raising lots of money? I mean, I'll put all the information in the link in the description so people can help. But just tell us a bit more about what you're aiming to do.
Yeah, so we've raised about £5,000 for a group of charities that help poverty impacted children or vulnerable children worldwide. So there's Save the Children, UNICEF, the Starfish Great Hearts Foundation, who work with AIDS affected children in South Africa, Faro, who have projects working with children in Romania, and then there's a breakfast club helping children get kind of food before they go in to learn at school so they can learn better with full bellies. And I wanted to do that just, you know, I've got some big charities, I've got some smaller ones that are a bit more targeted, but basically we're helping some of the most vulnerable people, you know, around the world have a better shot at life. And that's definitely helped me along the way, you know. Doing it for a cause has been really great. And I've met people who've handed me money along the way. When they've heard the story, they go to their pocket and give me 20 euros, you know. And that's, you know, again, it's sort of,
you're like, no, don't weigh me down. Yeah, thanks.
Exactly. I'm like, yeah, yeah. Yeah, like, can I send you the online link? Ashamed. Yeah, yeah. And that's, yeah, I mean, I'd love to, ideally love to get that up higher, you know. I feel like I'd like to make a bigger impact on the money raised. But yeah, that's been fantastic as well.
Oh, well, anyone listening to this, there'll be a link in the description. And if not, go on to runnersworld.com/UK and have a search, because there's also a piece about the whole adventure from Kieran. And there's also going to be a bit in the magazine, isn't there?
Yes, yeah. That's,
you've got to write that still.
I know, I know. How am I going to get...
When's your deadline?
We haven't talked about that yet. I don't know.
It's passed.
You're late.
Copy's late.
Yeah, I'm hoping it's not going to be like 3 days after I finish, but that's going to be... I don't know what's going to be harder, running this or writing about it, but yeah.
How have you been documenting this whole thing? Because, I mean, anyone who's seen, you've got cameras on you, and you've been posting on Insta and all this sort of stuff, but... documenting the whole thing of you, is there going to be a bigger edit come in? Is there, you know, are you going to do a whole like highlights reel on YouTube and all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I've been trying to capture as much as I can myself with my iPhone, and I've been making, like you said, just been doing like a voice diary has been really helpful. Funnily enough, actually, this is something I did. It's running along and talking into a mic to yourself about what's around you and what you're, is actually really good for running. I don't know, it sort of helped take my mind off everything. Weird, I'd get miles done whilst I was chatting. It's like, you know, running along looking slightly crazy. But yeah, I will do, there'll be like a short, I guess a short film or whatever from the bits and pieces that I've cut together. And yeah, all of it will be on Instagram, on YouTube and in different places. But yeah, I've tried to capture as much as possible, but there are definitely times where the effort of getting the camera out,
yeah,
has been too much.
I bet.
Yeah, it's different. You know, once a lot of people have said to me, why haven't you made a film of it, or why didn't you take a crew? And there's two things with that. One, it costs an awful lot of money. The second, actually, I think having done it, I think it changes the adventure, because having six other people around you all the time, or whatever it might have been in a van, would have been a whole different experience. And in a way, I'm quite glad I've done it this way. But
I guess you've been in the moment, haven't you? You've been like living it.
There's such a demand these days for everything to be captured all the time. Like, you can go, even like now, you visit places that are nice to look at, and it's just becomes like an Instagram. It's just an Instagram moment rather than just like going somewhere for the sake of it. So I think it's probably right. I think it's just not, be there on your own in the moment and capture some bits whenever you can, and that's it.
So when I was, a good example, sitting with Milos and his family, and they'd made beautiful food, and it was on this kind of this garden, and I, you know, my instinct was, oh, I should probably get the camera out now and plonk it at the end of the table and have some footage of us having it. And I was like, actually, I think it's intrusive, and I just wanted to be there and experience it. I didn't really want to make it weird for them and them to react differently because the camera's on. So, you know, there are bits that in the story that will be missing, but they're all, you know, I've got them all up in my head, and it's better for it. But
gonna have to rely on good old fashioned memory.
Exactly.
You know,
so, let's hope that still works.
Exactly. Oh, all that sun exposure.
Yeah.
Mate, thank you so much for joining us and taking time out on your rest day. It's been a pleasure to talk to you, and all the best with the final miles, the final 7 days of running. And yeah, thanks again for chatting to us.
No, thank you for having me on. It's been great to chat about it, and thanks for all the support along the way.
That brings us to the end of this week's Runners World podcast. A huge thanks to our guest, Kieran Alger, and good luck to him for the rest of this amazing journey that he's on. And thanks to you for listening.
You can subscribe to 3 issues of Runner's World for just £5. Head to hearstmagazines.co.uk/runnersworldpodcast to get this offer. And you can listen to the Runner's World podcast on Acast, iTunes,
everywhere.
Just search Runner's World UK and subscribe. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again next week.
Okay, I have 2 new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.